Okay, so my talk will not be next leading order. It's not even going to be next leading order. It's very simple, just leading order one loop calculations. So it will be very simple and trivial to most of you guys. But it's not my purpose of my talk to present you this very simple one loop calculations. The purpose of my talk is actually try to bring your attention to a whole new set of low energy precision measurements, which will hopefully become available. Some of them are actually available these days, and some of them will become available in the next couple of years. And so before going to the specific of the neutral current experiments that I will show in my talk, I just want to be a little bit broad and show you the actual whole set of low energy precision measurements. And so usually when you talk about precision measurements, you think about all those Zippo precisions, which have been done at fantastically very high precisions. But actually nowadays, there are quite some measurements that are using operation right now or will become into the operation in the next couple of years. So here I just give a couple of examples. So for example, the neutral current scattering experiment that I'll be talking about in detail in my talk. And this also actually includes atomic power dividing experiments. And also the heavy quark physics like B physics, you measure CP violation, you measure the rare B decays. Also people propose experiments to measure the neutron EDMs at many other magnitudes better than the current limits. Also people could measure rare K decays and also might hopefully solve the mysteries of the first low CKM unitarity issues. And as you have heard in the previous few talks, of the muon GMAS 2 results, which are fantastic experiments. And also, people are proposing experiments to do the mu E conversion, mu goes to E gamma, etc. So, all those actually will be reached a precision that you can actually use those to say anything about new physics, or you can actually use this as a consistent check of the standard model itself. So for those of you who are interested, who will hopefully become interested after my talk, there will be a workshop, there will actually be the first workshop on the precision electric physics for those measurements below the Zippos. And this workshop will be happening at Fermilab this year, May 12th to 14th. So for those who are interested, I recommend all of you to go to a website, which you probably you couldn't read it here. But you just type in Google and search for Sub-Z, this will bring you up. Also, I hope in May it won't be... Yeah, I think the snow will be gone. So it won't exactly be the same thing you saw over here. Okay, so in my talk, I'll focus on the neutral current scatterings. And I will show you two types of experiments. One is the power-dividing polarized electron scattering that includes actually two experiments. One is the E158 experiment at SLAC that measures the electron-electron molar scatterings. The other one is a Q-week experiment being performed at, I think it will be, in Jefferson Lab, which measures the polarized EP scatterings. And at the very, very end of my talk, I just spent a little minutes on the new TAP results. And the work I report here is based on my collaboration with Andrew Kurokov and Michael Ramsey himself. Okay, so here's the outline of my talk. I very briefly, what's the motivation, why we're interested in particular in those neutral current scatterings. And then I tell you a little more detail of this. It could actually be used to measure the sine squared theta at low energies. And in particular, the quantum we're interested in is actually not sine squared theta. It's actually the weak charge. This will be the quantity that will be directly measured in those experiments. And I'll show you the contributions to those, which includes both the loop collections and even the tree-level diagrams of the upper dividing contributions. But I will show you one nice thing of those neutral current experiments, because when you combine the results from different experiments, you could actually be able to say something about how you could distinguish various new physics use those experiments. And the very end, as I said, the new TAP result, the new TAP experiments. Okay, so let me begin with the motivations. Why we want to interest in those low energy precision measurements? There are those beautiful experiments has been done at Zippos. But the reason for we are interested in those right now, because they have reached a relatively high precision that we could actually use this to say something about new physics. So one famous example is the muon G-2, which caused a lot of excitement in our communities. And another example is actually the super-allowed beta decays and the pi decays. That experiment precision right now is about 10 to minus 3, while the new physics contribution is also roughly in the order of 10 to the minus 3. So with some future improvement in the experimental precision, you could actually use this as a consistent check of Stanton model itself. But the type of experiment I'm particularly interested in is the parity violating electron scatterings. And they actually have advantages. The reason is that this experiment will measure the weak charge, which is a coefficient put in here for the axial current on the electron side and the vector current on the fermion side. And the nice thing about this is if you measure the weak charge for electrons and for the protons, the amplitude at tree level at least, it's actually very small. It's 1 minus 4 sine squared theta, and just accidentally sine squared theta is close to a quarter. So this value is actually close to 0.1. So the standard model result for this is very small, which makes this experiment to be actually 10 times more sensitive to new physics. So instead of require experimental precision to be 10 to minus 3, you only need relative precision of 10 to minus 2 to be able to say anything about new physics. So from a theorist point of view, it's an easy experiment because you only need to reach 1% precision, but actually this is not really true from experimental point of view. It's very hard, difficult experiment, but fortunately now they're actually achieving this accuracy over here. And also another nice thing about those low energy measurements is when you do the Z-pulse, you're mostly sensitive to new physics that couple to Z-pulse because you measure all those forward, backward asymmetry and things like that. But for those low energy, they were sensitive to new physics, which not really mixed with these. And also, as we all know, we need both indirect and direct measurements to as a consistent check of series at loop orders. So here, I just want to first talk about the value of sine squared theta, the mixing angles. And x-axis is scale, y-axis is sine squared theta. And this is standard model predicted running of sine squared theta. You can see that at Z-pulse, the experiments over here, which measure sine squared theta with very high precisions. And as for the, but we want to check the running of this sine squared theta as is predicted in standard models. And then right now, there are two types of experiments. One is the cesium atomic parity violating experiments. And this number, this central value actually oscillates quite a lot in the past few years. And right now, the current status is the result more or less agree with standard model values. And also another experiment, as you have heard in previous talk, the new type experiments. It predicts roughly 3 sigma deviation, although there are a lot of ambiguity over here also. But those actually with relative high uncertainties on the value of sine squared theta, there are experiments being proposed. Oh, the E158 is in operation right now. To measure the value of sine squared theta at the energy scale between these two. So this one is roughly at energy scale Q squared, roughly equals 0, and this one, the average Q squared, is roughly 20 GeV squared. But for these two experiments, the average Q squared is roughly 0.03, and they will be able to perform a very precise measurement of sine squared theta with error bars 2 or 3 times smaller than these two experiments, which I'll talk a little bit more detail in the next transparencies. So as I said, the delta of sine squared theta is roughly 7 times 10 to the minus 4 here. And the nice thing about these two experiments is they use a hydrogen target in these two experiments. So you have a relatively clean experimental environment. You don't have to worry about all the complicated heavy nuclear issues. And also these two type experiments also theoretically it's very clean. The hydronic uncertainty is well under control. It's only about 2% of the total uncertainties over here. And also the QCD correction to that is also relatively under control. And also, as I just mentioned, because the standard model value is relatively small, which makes those experiments to be relatively sensitive to new physics. Okay, so the goal of our study is actually to use those measurements as a consistent check either for standard model or for any new physics beyond the standard models. And the particular one I will just show you as one example is the minimum supersymmetric standard models. If we impose our parity, then the 2D correction appears at the loop levels, and if you don't, then tree level corrections will appear for those measurements. And also in particular, the ones I'll talk about is the parity violating electron scatterings, which measure electron and proton weak charge, and also the new type experiments. So now, what are those parity violating electron scattering measurements? What do they measure? the scattering electron of another fermion, the other fermion could be another electron or could be proton, depending on which one you are looking at. And then they can change the electron polarization to be either left-handed or right-handed. Then they measure the left-right asymmetries of the scatterings. And this contribution coming from the interference between the dominant photon exchange and subdominant Z exchanges. And the particular quanta, it's sensitive to, it's called the weak charge over here. When you write down the effective Lagrangian, it's actually the coefficient for the axial current on the electron side and the vector current on the other fermion side. So if you write it out in terms of the Z couplings, it's actually the fermion vector current couplings of the fermions to the Z1. So this is all standard stuff. I just to kind of get it going through over here. So this, if you put in numbers, it just be 2R3 minus 4 cosine squared theta. But if you put in the numbers, you would notice that for both proton and electrons, it's just 1 minus 4 sine squared theta. Even if you put in the loop corrections in standard models, the value changes actually quite a lot, but still it's very small. For proton, it's 0.07, and for electron, it's 0.04 here. And for the two type of experiments that I will discuss, the experimental precision for the proton is roughly 4%, and for the electrons it's roughly 8%. So if you multiply them, you will very quickly notice that they're sensitive to the uncertainties in their measurement for delta sine squared theta. It's roughly 7 to 9 times 10 to the 9 minus 4. So this is actually 3 times better than the cesium atomic parity validity experiments and 2 times better than the new type results. So what are the then here is the radial corrections to all those tree level formulas I present to you. It actually can be formalized in a very simple ways. So here in brown color, I show the tree level result, tree level ones, and then you put in all those radial corrections. We put in the total normalization factor as rho here, and all the contributions proportion to charge as kappa. And these two are universal, so it doesn't depend on what the other side of fermion is. And then there are non-universal contributions, which I put in here as lambda f. So they get contributions from both standard model and from an additional new physics, and here I put it as SUSY, and I'm particularly interested in SUSY contributions. So let me just go to a little more detail and tell you what's the contributions to various low carbon lambda here. So low has two contributions, which is overall normalization of this Fermi constant over here, basically coming from, because Fermi constant is extracted from muon decay, so you need to include all those new physics contributions to muon lifetime. The second one is the pi zz, the self energies for the Z boson exchange, because this also comes as overall normalization factors. So this goes to rho. And then how about kappa here? It has quite some set of contributions. The first one is delta S squared over S squared because it's proportional to here. So S squared is extracted from fine structure constant, Fermi constant, Z boson mass. So we need to include all the radial correction to that, which is summarized in delta S squared over S squared. The second one is photon Z mixings. And this term also proportional to the charge of the fermions. And the last term is actually it's actually the first time I heard of the name people call it N-pole moment for the electrons. I think it's very popular in the nuclear physics societies. It characterizes the parity violating electron photon couplings, which will be zero at tree level, but at loop order you can generate such. And this particular type people just call it to the N-pole moment. So this is contribution to kappas. And then at last, we want to worry about the contribution of the flavor violating, of the flavor dependent ones, lambda f. It includes all the the vertex corrections and also wave function normalizations for electron side. And the similar things happen on the other fermion side. And then also all those box diagrams. So those are all things that we need to calculate, but in our case, it's just one loop, so it will be very simple for all of you guys. And so, and also, as I said, we're interested in the model of supersymmetries, and then there are those new particles, and then we put in all those parameters for the squawk mass, lepton mass, the Gugino mass, and also mean tiny beta for the Higgs and Higgsino sectors. And those are just one loop diagram, I'll just all ignore. And let me just directly present you how we do it and now what's the results. So we try to do our analysis to be model independent, which means we don't impose any particular pseudo-breaking scenarios. Instead, we just vary all those parameters we put in our in MSSM in a mass range of between 50 GeV to 1 TeV, and also we put tiny beta to be between 1.6 to 60. So the advantage and the disadvantage for this approach. The disadvantage is you have so many parameters in your models, you vary all of them, it's very hard to impose any particular bound on one particular parameter, so you don't really sensitive to any one particular parameters. But then the advantage is you don't have any model dependent, and also it gives you a roughly possible range of the MSSM corrections. And as we did in the usual case, we impose all those current experimental searches. We impose the 95% confidence level ability correction constraints because we don't want any new physics contribution to upset the ST constraints. And also, in addition, we impose the muon G minus 2s. So here's the result. It's presented in the space of the electron weak charge versus proton weak charge, and they are normalized to standard model values. So you can see the range of that for the electron weak charge, it's the relative correction is roughly about 8%, and for the proton, it's roughly about 4%. So this is roughly just one sigma of the experimental precision. So this looks a little bit smaller than we would expect, than we would hope so. But on the other hand, there's one very nice feature of this is that you can see the electron and the proton weak charge, they're highly correlated. They're more or less sit in this line over here. And the reason for that is you have radio corrections from three sides, the rho, kappa, and the lambda. And actually the dominant contribution is come from kappa, and the kappa is universal for both electron and the protons, which is given in this part over here. Just want to show a little more detail of what's the various contributions. So the lambda contribution is relatively small. It has two pieces. One is from vertex and the wave functions, and they more or less cancel each other, which is given by this purple line over here. And also the box diagram is just numerically small, which is given by this line over here. And then the rho contribution is also small. The reason for that, it's very close to zero. The reason for that is it's proportional to 1 minus 4 sine squared theta. Things 1 minus 4 sine squared theta is so small, so this is small. Therefore, the dominant contribution coming from kappa over here, which is very close to the total contributions. And the fact that the dominant one coming from kappa it will be same for both electron and proton weak charge, that's why they're so highly correlated. And actually, the contribution to kappa is mostly zero, which means when you do the experiment, you will see an active shift in sine squared theta. Okay, so much for loop. Now let's go even lower levels, tree level. So in MSSM, if you don't assume anything, you naturally have barrier on the lepton number varying operator, which here shows the lepton number varying operators. And we all know it's dangerous to introduce proton decay. So what people do is they impose our parities. So once you impose our parities, a very natural consequence is that the lightest supersymmetric particle is stable, which is a good candidate for dark matters. So in our case, we want to analyze the effect of the operator varying contributions, and we're only interested in the lepton number violating operator, which are given over here. So here I show the Feynman diagram that will contribute to the proton weak charge. But actually, there another contribution we have to take into account is all those operator varying will also contribute to the muon decays, which affect the Fermi constant, because Fermi constant is extracted from muon decays. And in addition, we know that there are those low energy measurements that has been performed, and all those RPV contribution will also contribute to those. So we don't want the coefficient we pick to be upset those measurements, so we also need to take those into account, which is the super loud beta decay that measure VUD, the atomic parity varying for cesium, which measures the cesium weak charge, the ratio of pion decay to electron versus muon, and also the Fermi constant over here. So what we do is we take all those existing ones, and then we can get a 95% confidence level allowed region for those RPV coefficients. And given that, we can evaluate what's the contribution to electron and the proton weak charge. So the result is given here. For the region enclosed by this red curve is a 95% confidence level of RPV contributions to electron and the proton weak charge. But nice thing I want to point out here is I also overlay the loop corrections. You can see that they more or less occupy two distinctive regions. So which means if in the future you could possibly do a mesh, if not in the future, if you have the measurement both from electron and the proton weak charge, and you can see which region it sits at, it could tell you some whether if new physics is supersymmetry, then it could tell you whether RPV is conserved or not, or it might give us some hint of whether we have pseudo dark matter or not. So let me just explain a little more on that part, and actually we can use those to distinguish the whole set of new physics proposals people have. And before I go into just a little bit reminder of this cesium weak charge, we can, for all those calculations we've done before, we can very easily extract the contributions of pseudo to the cesium weak charge, which is add up of up quark weak charge and down quark weak charge. Turns out these two cancel each other. So for cesium, the pseudo correction is really small. So when you have proton weak charge, electron weak charge, and cesium weak charge experiments, and I list a set of new physics here just as an example. So when I have arrow means these two are correlated, which happens in the case for MSSM and if you have actual Z bosons. And but the thing is, for actual Z bosons, for the correction to proton weak charge and electron weak charge, they could have the other sign comparing to the case where you only have the MSSM. So once we have these two experiments and also cesium weak charge, we could distinguish these two new physics. And also, if we have a lepton quark, then you don't have contribution to the electron weak charge at all, but you do have sizable contribution to proton weak charge. And also, as I just showed you, for the RPV contribution from SUSEs, you have the other sign contribution to protons comparing just to the loop correction. So once we have a whole set of those weak charge measurements, it could possibly help us to distinguish various new physics. And so this part is same, the one I showed you before, which I just put on this map, all those existing experiments, APVs, NUTEF, EE scattering, EP scatterings. And there are actually quite some experiments being planned in the future. One is a Jefferson Lab type of Muller experiment, very similar to SLAC, but they expected to do the similar measurements with a precision to be better than the SLAC experiments. The other one is I think this one might not become realistic, but I put it here anyway. It's a disparity experiment which do the electron scattering over a deuteron that being proposed as SLAC, but I think somehow it get cancelled or disproved. But there's another proposal at Jefferson Lab to do a similar type of experiment at similar energy ranges. So here just put out all the future possibilities. And if in the future we have linear collider, hopefully, and if it could run in the E minus mode, it could give us a measurement of sine squared state at much higher energies. So what I want to say here is, with a combination of all those different experiments measured at different values of energy scale, could give you possibly, we could establish the running of sine squared state and compare with standard model, or possibly say anything about new physics. Okay, so let me just say a few comments about NUTEF, since we could do the same analysis for pseudo contribution to NUTEF. And thanks to Cardina, I don't need to go to details of what NUTEF do the experiments. They just, what they measure is the annual the ratio of neutral current versus charge current for neutrino and antineutrinos. So here I just give you the results. The experimental results minus the standard model predictions for the neutrino is roughly 2 sigma away. And for the antineutrino, it's actually more or less consistent with standard model values. So this, if you look into detail of how this annual and annual bar expressed in terms of all those couplings, it's actually being expressed as a left-right coupling of neutrinos with up-type quark or down-type quarks. So we can do our very similar analysis as we did before for the paired-variety electron scattering. And we want to see if SUSE could possibly give an explanation for that. The answer is negative. So you can see that the x-axis is annual and the y-axis is annual bar, but most of regions it's just being positive, which is actually, even in the science, right, there's no hope to explain the new type of experiments if you, in the sense of the supersymmetry over here. So we did the same, okay, this one previous I think I've ignored, but since the question raised in the last talk, so I just spent 1 minute explaining it. So it had nothing to do with my talk, but just for clarification. So this is Preissner-Wolfenstein relations, which is the same expression that Carl just showed us. And they have this R here, which is the ratio of the neutrino versus antineutrino charge current cross sections. It's roughly equal to a half. So this is the Poisson-Wolfson relation, but actually in practice, when NUTEP actually do the experiments, they actually fit both, they don't fit for R minus, they don't even fit for R minus 2, they actually just directly fit to R nu and R nu bars. And they have two independent, two analyses. One is called, one is impulse the charge quark mass to be 1.4 GeV, I think, and the other one is keep it to be free parameter to be fit. And then effectively, when they do those fittings, you can think of it effectively use a quantity called R minus 2, the way they replace this R here with cosi, and then they can extract the value of sine squared theta. And for these different fits, the effective cosi, for the first fit, it's about 0.25, and for the second fit, it's very close to a quarter. Okay, so I get to know this because we're trying to analyze the Greener contribution, but that's kind of irrelevant. Okay, so I pass this on. And also we did the same things for the apparent variating contribution, trying to see if that could possibly explain NUTEP. And also it's kind of very disappointing. So I show the RPV contribution, 95% confidence level of RPV contribution to RNU, but again you can see that for most of the cases the sign is wrong here. We want negative sign, but here we get positive sign. Even if the sign is right, the value is way too small. So it's kind of the negative result for the possible SUDE contribution to NUTEP. But NUTEP itself has a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of ambiguity over there, so I'm not going to worry about that. Okay, so conclusions. I have shown you just the examples of how we can use low-energy precision measurements to say something about standard, to add a consistent check of standard model, say something about new physics. I show you the parity variety electrons, E scattering and EP scatterings, and then we could use this possibly to test new physics or to prove a test standard model or to prove new physics. The MSSM corrections to electron and proton weak charge is roughly 8% of and 4%. So it's, unfortunately, it's kind of small, it's roughly 1 sigma. But on the other hand, if we have the both measurement for the electron and proton weak charge, since they are correlated, we could possibly distinguish various new physics, as I showed you, one transparency of several new physics scenarios, and we could also possibly distinguish whether the apparent is conserved or not in supersymmetry. That might say something about the dark matters. So this looks very nice. On the other hand, I show you the SUDE contribution to the NUTEP, which all seems very disappointing. The loop correction is around sign, very small, and even RPV is kind of hard. We do find a very small primary regions coming from the Greener contribution, which I don't have time to discuss in detail, but they might have the possibility to explain the NUTEP, but on the other hand, this particular contribution, it's constrained by some other considerations, for example, the first row CKM unitarities. So this also doesn't really look very promising, so this looks bad. But we need to be optimistic. So let's take this negative result just to look at it in a better way. So soon they can explain it, so just looking for something else. Thanks. Yes?
E158's announced results last year. Have you applied your techniques to their results?
In that case, I think they only collect a half amount of data that they plan to collect in the whole thing. So they haven't done the whole
analysis. Actually, Shufeng, could you step back to the transparency?
Oh, sure.
They have announced
them. Yeah, oops. I think I need to go back. Let me do this way. Transparency of?
The one where you showed all the experiments.
Oh, okay.
It's about five back.
Well, enough lower. Yes, you're right. This one.
Yes.
Okay.
So E158 has announced a result. It's roughly double the error bar of this, and it's more or less centered at the theoretical point.
Not really, because then that it's actually very close to the either APV or NUTEP. It doesn't really say anything. And the SUDE contribution, it's roughly 1 sigma of those two experiments. So if the error by 2 times larger, it doesn't really say anything about supersymmetry. Okay.
The whole data sample has been taken, and hopefully the final result will be announced this summer.
You're right.
Just a comment. One has to be careful in the definition of these electroweak form factors, kappa and rho, because if you are not careful, they are gauge dependent, What? And they are infinite in the unitary gauge, for
yes.
example.
Yes.
So one has to include not only self-energies, but also box contributions
yes.
and vertex contributions, etc.
Yes, yes, yeah.
It's important to remember that.
Yeah, we actually, we look at the different definitions of Kalman laws in the literatures. Yes, yes, yeah, but we did this consistently, hopefully. I think. yeah, we check all the gauge independence, all the infinite cancels, and we're only left with finite piece. It's just the whole final result of the weak charge doesn't depend on how you define Kalman and law, but by itself, yes, you're right.
I have a question concerning this plot that you showed where you compared M's M and R parity by relating M's M. Mm-hmm. Could you show this?
Yes.
And was somewhat before.
I know where it is. This one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you show the plot?
Oh, oops. It goes back. No, the one before. Yes.
I would naively expect that the blue area should be completely within the red area because
no,
it's just
why?
An extension of the model that you have there.
No,
and if you make parameters.
Because in this case, it's all loop level contributions. This one is tree level contributions. These two don't overlap at all except the 0 point, which is standard model.
Why but you always have the loop contributions.
No, in this case we don't include any loop contribution at all. We just purely put in the tree level contribution.
Okay, but if you would add the loop contributions that are there and you know them, then of course everything would shift.
Yeah, right, if you do that and case,
then
yes.
You cannot make the claim anymore, say, we may now say we have our parity violation or not, because you will be somewhere in the red area where the blue area is within.
Yeah, right, if you want to combine these two, yes, then you couldn't really say anything. But
no.
Okay, good.
Other questions, comments?